Okay, let's unhack this. History often feels like these massive, sweeping events,
Look,
global stage stuff.
right, big picture.
But what happens when you zoom way, way in? When you look at how something like World War I, this colossal, earth-shattering conflict, how it ripples down,
Yeah.
how it dramatically impacts the lives of a single specific community in a particular place.
Yeah, the micro level. It's often where you see the real human story.
Exactly. And that's our mission today. We're diving deep into the experience of the German minority in the Lublin region of Poland during those incredibly turbulent years, 1914 to
That's a
1918.
really intense period for them.
And this deep dive, it's based on a fascinating academic paper that gives us this ground-level view. It uses specific data, historical
Right,
records.
it's not just broad strokes. It really tries to trace their journey.
Yeah, this intense 4-year journey through war, occupation, forced displacement, and then their eventual complicated return.
It's quite the story.
So think of this as a shortcut, maybe, a way to understand a lesser-known but, well, absolutely crucial piece of history.
For sure.
We're going to pull out the most important nuggets from this material, uncover some surprising facts, and see what crucial knowledge emerges about this period for the German minority in Lublin.
Okay, where do we start?
Well, to really grasp the impact of the war, I think we first need to understand who these German settlers were before 1914.
Good point. Context is key.
Their presence in the Lublin region wasn't new, right? It had origins going back quite a long time.
That's right. This settlement movement began well before World War I. And there were multiple reasons why people migrated here. It wasn't just one thing.
Like, what sort of reasons?
Well, you had economic and social changes happening both within the Russian Empire, which controlled this area then, and back in the colonists' home countries, places like Prussia, Central, and Southern Germany.
And the Russian government, initially, they were okay with this.
Actually, yeah, initially the Tsarist authorities had a pretty favorable attitude towards these German arrivals. A key moment was the 1864 enfranchisement reform.
What did that do?
It granted property rights to peasants, including these colonists, provided they had Russian citizenship.
Yeah.
And afterwards, land prices in Lublin were relatively low, so that was, very appealing.
Makes sense. Cheaper land, property rights. So where did they actually settle?
They primarily settled in private estates, though there were exceptions. Like in the Ucaw district, they also settled on government land there.
And what were they doing? What was their main occupation?
Agriculture, pretty much entirely. These were farming communities.
The paper mentions specific places, doesn't it? Early colonies.
It does, like Meckelsdorf, founded way back in 1782.
Wow, that early.
Yeah, or Zazusz in 1803. Then colonies in the Zamoście Ordynacze area, places like Horyzów, Sebadia, and others scattered across various districts,
Yeah.
Krasnystaw, Radzy, Garbulin, Rugro, Chez, Hrubieszów, Lublin. They were quite spread out.
So even before that 1864 reform really kicked in, this wasn't just a few scattered families.
No, not at all. We're talking significant numbers already. Estimates suggest around 95 German colonies existed in the Lublin and Podlaskie gubernias, those administrative provinces in the Russian Empire.
95
And
colonies.
within the Lublin gubernia alone, maybe 6,000 people, 1,100 settlements by 1862. That's a substantial pre-war presence.
Okay. And did people keep coming?
Yes, but later migration had a specific character. It's described as Durchsiedlung,
Which means.
essentially descendants of those earlier settlers branching out looking for new land nearby, sort of internal expansion.
Gotcha. But you mentioned the czarist policy wasn't always favorable. It shifted.
It shifted pretty dramatically, yeah. In 1887, there was a decree and ukaz aimed at limiting foreign land acquisition, though its main impact was on non-citizens.
Okay.
But more significantly, I think, was the creation of the Chom Gubernia in 1912. Colonists in that specific area started being viewed much more negatively by officials.
Why was that?
They were seen as a barrier to Russification efforts, the push to make the population more Russian in language and culture.
Right. So this is a clear change in official attitude before the big storm hit.
Absolutely. The ground was already shifting.
So where were the biggest concentrations before the war?
The largest groups were concentrated in the Chem, Rodowa, and Lubartow districts. Some communes, these smaller administrative units, had a really high percentage of German speakers,
Right.
like Sajkow Commune. There, they apparently made up 41% of the population.
41%. Wow.
Yeah, and it highlights an interesting point the paper makes. Germans in these rural agricultural areas tended to assimilate slower than those who settled in cities like Lublin itself.
So you had these established farming communities kind of keeping to themselves culturally, but the political winds were starting to shift against them.
Exactly. And that stormed, of course.
Was World War I, the paper pinpoints it as the absolute critical turning point.
It caused truly drastic, sudden demographic changes for this community. Just catastrophic, really.
How so? What did the Russians do?
Well, the Russian authorities adopted a, well, radicalized policy towards German colonists almost immediately. They were labeled subjects of states at war with Russia. Enemy aliens, essentially.
Right, because Germany was the enemy.
Precisely. And then the actual military operations swept through the region, adding to the chaos.
And this led to deportations.
Large-scale forced deportations. German colonists were forcibly removed, sent deep into Russia, often with very little warning, just rounded up and shipped out.
The numbers must have been devastating.
They are absolutely stark. Here's a crucial insight the paper reveals. It estimates a staggering 73.4% drop in the evangelical population, which was largely German, in the former Chin Gubernia alone between 1914 and 1921.
73.4% just gone.
Almost three-quarters of the community in that area vanished in just a few years. German sources provide a broader context, estimating that overall, maybe 140,000 Germans were deported from the entire Kingdom of Poland.
140,000. That's a massive displacement event.
Huge. And the immediate consequence on the ground, abandoned land.
Right, if the farmers are gone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For example, in just one commune, Brzezinie, by the spring of 1916, 1,685 morgo of land were lying fallow.
Morgo, remind me.
Oh, right. It's a historical unit of land measure,
Right.
roughly a little over an acre or maybe half a hectare. So 1,685 of those is a significant amount of farmland just sitting empty because the people were gone.
So how do we know just how few people were left by 1916 after this initial wave?
Ah, well, this brings us to a really crucial historical source mentioned in the paper, the Austrian census of 1916.
Okay, the Austrians took over from the Russians in some areas.
Well, the Central Powers pushed the Russians out in 1915. So yes, the Austrian occupying authorities conducted this census, and it gives us a snapshot after that initial devastating wave of Russian deportations.
And what did it show?
It showed just how significantly the German population had been reduced. According to this census, only about 2,147 Germans remained in the former Lublin Gubernia.
2,000, down from, well, many thousands more before the war.
A tiny fraction. And the census was key because it used criteria like language and religion. That helped identify the remaining German community, differentiating German speakers from Polish speakers, and German evangelicals from Polish Catholics or evangelicals.
So by 1916, the community we started talking about was just decimated by war and deportation.
Utterly decimated.
But the situation didn't stay static, right? Things shifted again in 1915.
That's right. The Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary, launched their offensive, pushing the Russians out of this whole area.
So new occupiers.
Exactly. This led to the occupation of the Lublin region, which was then divided into Austrian and German zones of control.
And with the Russian withdrawal and these new occupiers, what happened to the deported people?
Well, a new dynamic began. The repatriation wave.
People started coming back.
Yes, the paper describes a spontaneous mass return of the deported German colonists from deep inside Russia.
Spontaneous, not organized.
Largely spontaneous, especially at first. This return accelerated, particularly between 1917 and 1919, often happening under the, let's say, protective umbrella of the occupying Central Powers forces.
So the occupiers were okay with them coming back.
Generally, yes. There were even some earlier returns starting in 1916, though sometimes those returnees were apparently transported further west, maybe for labor in Germany.
Now, what's really fascinating here are the occupiers' intentions. What did they want?
Well, the German government in particular had a clear interest in acquiring land in these occupied territories
For what purpose?
for future colonization. They viewed these areas essentially as intended for annexation into some kind of expanded German sphere of influence after the war.
So they wanted German settlers there.
Yes. They were even concerned about land speculation driving up prices and making it harder for Germans to buy land.
Did those plans work out?
Not really, no. The paper notes these annexation-driven land policies were largely unsuccessful. They met resistance, especially from the Polish administration that was set up in the Warsaw General Governorate.
So a bit of a disconnect, grand plans versus reality.
Exactly. While some in the German government had these big plans for future colonization, the people on the ground, the military administrators, were dealing with the immediate reality. Thousands of returning colonists needing help, their properties abandoned or destroyed.
Right, a practical problem needing a solution.
And this led to some initial inconsistency in occupation policy, didn't it? You had this long-term goal of securing land for future German settlement, bumping up against the immediate, practical need to handle the returning colonists and their property.
Yeah, that sounds complicated.
It was. The paper even mentions organizations back in Germany, like the Fürsorgeverein für Rückwanderer in Berlin.
What were they doing?
They were actually encouraging re-emigration to Germany, sometimes causing confusion among the colonists themselves. Like, should they try and rebuild here in their old homes or just go back to Germany?
Yeah.
Which wasn't really back for many of them.
A tough choice. So how did the occupiers try to manage the property situation?
To address the issue of abandoned property and manage this whole return process, the occupiers established a specific body in 1917. It was called the Care Office for German Properties.
Okay, what was its job?
Its purpose was, well, several things. To secure and maintain abandoned German property, manage it under something called compulsory administration. Zwangsverwaltung was the term.
Right.
And importantly, to buy and sell land, prioritizing German interests in those transactions. It was also supposed to provide aid to the returnees.
That sounds politically charged, prioritizing German interests.
It absolutely was. And here's a really critical point the paper uncovers. The political tension this created, especially because a parallel office that had apparently been planned for managing Polish abandoned properties was stopped.
Ah, so only help for the German properties.
It signaled a clear and deliberate preference for German interests over Polish ones under the occupation. Very controversial.
Okay, so beyond managing property, did the occupiers provide direct aid for these families returning, often with nothing?
Yes, they did. There were direct aid programs.
What did that look like on the ground?
There was significant financial aid. This included cash allowances, sometimes quite substantial. The paper mentions figures like 1,000 to 5,000 marks per family.
That's a lot of money then.
It was significant help. And from late 1917, they offered interest-free loans specifically for rebuilding houses and farms. They even helped people exchange the Russian rubles they might have brought back from deportation into German marks.
So, real financial support. What about practical stuff? Farming needs more than just cash.
That was crucial, too. They provided economic aid, things like livestock, cattle, and horses. Though, importantly, these were often acquired through requisitions.
Meaning taken from?
Taken from the local Polish population, which obviously caused more friction.
I can imagine. What else?
They also supplied seeds, agricultural tools, building materials. The paper notes materials were sometimes provided for free, like wood from state forests, or materials salvaged from dismantled Russian military buildings. And they helped with immediate shelter when people first arrived back.
Okay, so quite comprehensive support. But you mentioned friction. This leads to another controversial point the paper highlights.
Yes, the privileged status given to these German colonists.
How so?
The paper explicitly notes the, well, controversial exemption of German colonists from property requisitions, the kind who were being applied to the Polish population.
So Poles might have their horse taken, but a returning German colonist wouldn't.
Essentially, yes. It put German colonists in a much more favorable position compared to their Polish neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
It really illustrates the political agenda behind the occupation's aid efforts. It wasn't purely humanitarian.
Right. Was there also, like, legal or administrative help getting their farms back officially?
Absolutely. Assistance was given to help colonists regain their property, especially lands that had been placed under that compulsory administration while they were gone.
How was that organized?
The occupiers created specific positions, like compulsory administrators in districts. The paper mentions a Mr. von Garen in Yuko as an example, and district representatives whose job it was to coordinate the aid, collect information on the returnees, and manage assembly points for people arriving back from Russia.
So quite a structured effort. The paper also mentions the church being involved.
Yes. The Evangelical Church was actively involved in organizing aid for the returnees. Superintendent General Julius Bursche, a key figure, issued an appeal for the broader community to help returning colonists. They even collected livestock donations, for instance.
And the administration supported this church effort.
Yes, it seems the church's efforts were supported by the occupation administration. It all worked together.
So it feels like this wasn't just about basic survival aid. There was a deliberate, almost political effort to consolidate and strengthen German identity in these occupied lands.
Yes, absolutely. The occupiers actively supported this, going well beyond just material aid.
How?
They supported organizations like the Deutsche Verein, which was based in Lodz, but covered the German occupation zone. This organization influenced social and cultural life, organizing lectures, courses, agricultural support, all aimed specifically at the German community.
And education, that's often key to identity.
Definitely. Promoting German education was a priority. The occupiers mandated German language in schools where the majority of students were German. They removed Russian from the curriculum.
Okay.
Regulated the teaching hours for different languages, and emphasized detailed evangelical religious education, again, strengthening ties to their specific church and cultural community.
So using schools to reinforce Germanness.
Pretty much. Although the paper does note that the actual school administration was transferred back to nascent Polish authorities in 1917.
Yeah.
But even then, public schools were still mandated to be open to minorities.
Did they help rebuild churches, too, since they were important community centers?
Yes, they helped rebuild damaged church structures, which were, as you say, central to these communities.
It seems like a very comprehensive effort to bolster this specific group.
It was. They even tried to encourage a sense of connection back to Germany on a more personal level. The paper mentions a fascinating detail.
What's that?
Upon request, a notation could be added to passports stating of German origin from Poland.
Really? What was the point of that?
It seems like a subtle but deliberate way to link this diaspora community back to the homeland, suggesting a sense of belonging that went beyond their immediate location in Poland, tying them conceptually to Germany.
Okay, so let's track this arc again. They went from being a settled agricultural community. Then the trauma of deportation wiped out most people.
A huge majority, yeah.
Then this complex return under a new occupation with significant and often preferential aid and support. Support aimed not just at survival, but also at strengthening their German identity.
And distinguishing them, implicitly or explicitly, from their Polish neighbors.
Right. But what happened when the war abruptly ended in 1918? Germany and Austria-Hungary lost.
Well, the defeat of the Central Powers meant the immediate halt to any German expansion plans in the East. Those colonization ambitions we mentioned. Gone. Kaput.
And did that change things for the people on the ground?
It led to further demographic shifts, yes, but in a different direction this time.
How so?
There was a subsequent wave of emigration. People of German origin from Eastern Europe, including from this Lublin region, started moving back to Germany in the years immediately following the war.
So even more people left.
Yes. This further contributed to significant demographic losses for the community that actually remained in the newly independent Poland.
So what was the final state of the German minority in the Lublin region right as the Second Polish Republic is being born?
They were a drastically reduced community. Far fewer German colonies remained than before the war.
And the ones that survived?
Many of the settlements that did survive became quite isolated, essentially small German-speaking enclaves within a now Polish-majority landscape.
And the paper mentions a process that followed in the years after the war ended.
It highlights the process of partial or, in some cases, full Polonization, basically assimilation.
Hmm.
This affected the remaining German population in the years after 1918 as they integrated, or perhaps struggled to integrate, into the new Polish state.
Okay, so let's try and recap this whole intense journey. We started with a community settled in the Lublin region for generations, mainly farmers.
Right, established for a long time.
World War I hits. Radical Tsarist policies, military chaos, devastating deportations that wiped out the vast majority, a stunning loss.
This is a catastrophic break.
Then came the occupation by the Central Powers, the spontaneous, complex return of many who'd been deported.
A difficult journey back, often to nothing.
And a period where the occupying forces provided significant, often preferential, support. For survival, yes, but also to strengthen their German identity, linking them to Germany. Distinguishing them from Poles.
A very deliberate policy with long-term implications.
And ultimately, the defeat of those occupying powers, plus further emigration, left the community drastically smaller, geographically more isolated.
And facing the challenges of finding their place in the newly formed Polish state, which led to processes of assimilation over time.
This deep dive into such a specific, localized history during a massive global conflict, it really reveals the human dimension, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And the often unintended, or maybe sometimes intended, consequences of wartime policies and huge political shifts. You see how these massive events translate directly into forced displacement, loss of property, shifts in community structure, fundamental challenges to identity for ordinary people.
And the policies of occupying powers, even when framed as aid or support, They weren't neutral, were they?
Not at all. They profoundly shaped the long-term identity and survival prospects of minority communities, in this case, attempting to link them to a foreign power, Germany, which then had its own set of implications after that occupation ended and Poland became independent.
A very complex legacy.
So here's something maybe for you, the listener, to consider as you go about your day. How does the fate of local populations like this German minority in Lublin remain just so inextricably linked to larger geopolitical struggles, not just during the conflict itself, but in the complex, often painful aftermath?
And what does that tell us about the lasting, transforming impact of war and occupation on the very fabric of communities, identities, and neighborly relations long after the fighting stops?